Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
Good day, James. How are you?
I'm good, Jonas. How's it going? It's been a long week, hasn't it?
It's been a long week. It's been a long week, I'm sure, for fans. It's been a long week for the team. But we still have some stuff to dissect on our pod. We won't be doing many pods for a bit after this, but we felt we needed to dissect what we heard from management, from the players, from Sheldon Keefe, as they kind of wrapped up the 2020-21 season.
Maybe we just pause, we take next week off, and then we have a guest or something after that. I mean, we're still going to do the podcast, but it's not going to be, we're certainly not going to, I think we've done four this week. So we're certainly not going to be that busy.
Yes. Well, I think we should start, and we'll get into, you know, the situations with Zach Hyman, with Morgan Riley, with Frederik Andersen. We'll get into the core probably pretty quickly here. But let's just start with like a top-down reaction, I think, to Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas. What did you make of what they had to say?
I was a little bit surprised that they were so definitive about what they're not going to do. Like, they kind of ruled out a whole bunch of things right away. I mean, the biggest one, obviously, is they ruled out trading Nylander or Marner. They basically kind of doubled down on the way they've built the roster to date.
Yeah.
I guess it's not shocking if you think back to, I mean, they did this last year as well. The only thing is, I just thought they might be a little bit more vague or a little bit less definitive about. Wondered if they might explore some of that stuff a little bit before saying, we're definitely not doing this. I'm not sure what the advantage is to saying we're not doing this right away without even like looking into it.
Yeah, it kind of feels like maybe the way to go is to say, given the way things have gone,
just say we're evaluating everything. Everything's on the table. I mean, that's what most teams do in a situation like this.
Yeah.
So I understand, you know, the fans are, you know, if you read the comments on your story about the what Shanahan and Dubas had to say, they're pretty upset. Fans are not happy. They feel like they didn't really get the answers that they wanted. Now, of course, you don't want your GM to run a team like a fan, you know, being emotional and kind of trading everyone based on how a couple of games go. And Kyle Dubas was right when he said, you know, when you're at the four-game mark of the first round, you feel pretty good about the team. They had a good season. I mean, I wrote a column after game four saying this feels like a different team. Yep. And they've played 60 pretty good games. You have to feel pretty good about everything that's gone into what's happened. And then it all went to shit. So the question, Jonas, is like, do you think that three games of going to shit, like, to what degree should that influence how aggressive they are this offseason?
Well, in the initial aftermath of Game 7, you and I both wrote stories. And I remember debating with you on Slack, like, can they possibly just run this back? And I kind of felt at the time that they at least needed to be open to the possibility of trading one of those guys. That's not to suggest you do, but that you at least have to like look at it and have meetings about it and see what's out there and see if there's a way to improve your team. Because like I believe in this, I like this approach. I like stars. Like, you know, I've been about that for a while. But even now, myself, I'm starting to wonder if you really can do it. Like, if it's just, if it's too hard to build a team like this, if it leaves, like, it maybe it just leaves too much, like, there's just too much margin for error. Like, you have to master everything. And that's why I'm like you. And I thought, if people haven't seen it, you just posted a story about how they can build a team. You have no room to pardon my language, fuck anything up. Like everything kind of has to hit when you do it like this. And that's why it's surprising that they're just like, nope, this is how we're going to continue to do it.
And I don't think, you know, Brendan Shanahan mentioned it, but you know, the pandemic and the flat cap, they couldn't have anticipated. So nope. If they had to change or deviate from the plan, it's part of why they would need to do that isn't their fault. Like the world changed, right? So maybe your strategy needs to change. And so, you know, the story that I've got on the site now looks at a whole bunch of different salary cap scenarios. If they want to, they can bring back the same team. I think they could bring everybody back. They got the cap space to do it. They got the cap space to do it other than Frederik Andersen. They can just take the $5 million from Frederik Andersen, get a different backup goalie, spend another $2 million or so on Hyman. You know, re-sign Spezza and Thornton and Bogosian and all those guys, Galchenyuk, for cheap contracts. They can do that. Like, they could have basically the exact same roster other than Nick Foligno, who didn't do anything anyway. They could do that if they want. I don't think that's what they're going to do. The other thing they could do, Jonas, is they could return very similar roster. Don't sign Simmons and Thornton and get two different guys for, like, $1.5 million. You're still going to have the same problem where you've got Mikheyev and Engvall and these guys on the third line, and they're not going to be able to produce offense when you need it. You know, I think that they're going to have to find a way to push some of those guys down the lineup. I think they're going to, like, I think Engvall is a good player, but he should be on your fourth line.
Yeah,
and if you're relying on him on your third line, it's problematic, and you're in danger of being shut down.
Well, and like we've pointed out, the tricky thing is when you have whatever, 700 grand, a million, it's hard to find like impactful players. Like it just is. Like you're going to be cycling through guys like Jimmy Vesey and Travis Boyd and like Simmons and Thornton.
It's not even like they did a bad job of that last year, really. Like, I mean, I guess the Simmons was the one that I kind of questioned the most, I think. I guess they didn't do a good job because VC and Boyd weren't good enough to avoid being on waivers. Thornton ended up not being very good, but I mean, Thornton was worth the gamble.
Yeah.
So like what were the worst moves they made the last offseason? Simmons, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the center ice thing, they didn't totally solve. As you pointed out, they may have tried, they couldn't. The goaltending with Frederik Andersen, they decided to bring him back. That didn't work out. And the Foligno trade didn't work out.
Yeah, Andersen's a good one. And the trade deadline stuff didn't work out either. So it's not like they were faultless, but...
But that's the problem, James. Like, you have to be pretty close to faultless to get this done. And that's why I get it. It's pretty clear they want to get out the message to those guys, like, we believe in you and, like, we're not giving up. And, like, you send that message right after the season, like, so there's no doubt.
I don't think that, like, Tavares and Matthews and Nylander needed to hear that message. Maybe it's for Marner, I guess, to cut with all the...
Yeah.
All the, I don't think those other guys, like...
I just think what they'll tell you and what... I mean, what they said is, like, and I believe this to be true, like, those are very difficult players to replace. There just aren't that many players. And you trade one of those guys, and suddenly you spend the next 5 years trying to find one of those guys. But I think you can explore it. Like, you can... And maybe they will, honestly. Maybe, like, as much as they can say whatever they want, maybe they still spend the offseason and see what's out there and see if there are... Are scenarios that make them better by trading one of those guys. I kind of feel like if you're not doing that, you're not totally doing everything you should.
That was my feeling right after Game 7 was that they need to explore what's available and, you know. I tried to look at what they could do that was radical change if it's not moving one of the big four forwards. I mean, I think the only player that's left, assuming they bring back Zach Hyman, because obviously there's a lot of money there that they could do something with, but they would just have to spend that on getting another forward to replace Zach Hyman. So it's not really like that substantial change. The one thing I contemplated they could look at is moving on from Morgan Riley a year early. There's money there that they could allocate up front if they feel like they can go cheaper on the blue line and still be a good team. That was the one thing that I think maybe might make sense. If you move Kerfoot or lose him in expansion and you move Riley, all of a sudden you do have enough money to do some substantial things.
Yeah. I mean, I saw in your story the defense that you end up trotting out. Eh? Like,
yeah.
You're really like, you're rolling the dice on Travis Dermott, assuming he's not taking an expansion. You're rolling the dice on Sandin.
Well, so let me ask you this, Jonas. Like, ideal world, where do you want Dermott and Sandin to play next season? Are they just third pair guys
third
again?
Third pair. Yep, third pair. And I mean, there's a conceivable case that one of them is not on the team or isn't.
Well, playing. Yeah, I mean, and so then you're not bringing back Bogosian. So
that's what I'm not ready to rule out. Like, I kind of think you do bring back Bogosian. Like, that he kind of filled the box that I think they needed him to fill. Like, I don't think you want to go into the playoffs with Sandin and Dermott as your third pair.
So that's part of what I wonder. So then you're going to have one of Sandin or Dermott who sits half the season, and they're gonna switch in and out or something. Or
you're like trading them.
Right.
And I don't think you're trading Sandin. So, I mean, maybe you're trading Dermott. I don't know. I think it's still a very real question as to what Travis Dermott is. Like,
I agree. I was just contemplating, like, is there something there with the younger defensemen that they have that would allow them to go relatively cheap on the blue line? I don't know. Like,
who's been their best defenseman the last two playoffs? Morgan Riley.
You and I disagree on this, and I don't know if there's a point to us arguing it again, but I don't think you can let Morgan Riley just walk for nothing. I think you need to have you need to have some sort of a plan here that is a little bit more.
But so you don't buy my argument that you're trying to win a cup. You're going to do everything you can. Forget about the future. You're trying to win a cup next season. Let me just answer this question. What are you going to do that's going to make your team better by trading Morgan Riley? Like, that's, to me, is such a fine thread to, what's the saying? To thread. Fine.
Needle to thread, right?
Needle to thread. Nice, James.
What are they going to solve? They're going to be able to change the dynamic of their team. They're going to be able to free up cap space that they can spend elsewhere. Is it a bit of an unorthodox idea? Yes. I just don't,
it's a gamble, right? It's a gamble.
What other options do they have to substantially change the lineup that they bring back next year?
Well, that's the riddle of this whole thing. And like, I'm not sure I asked it the best way to Kyle Dubas, but like, that's the thing. Like, so you're not training the core. Like, how do you get better? How do you improve around the margins? Like, just keep trying that same thing of trying to hit on some guys in free agency? Because like, part of their problem is they don't have a lot of prospects who you look at and say, that guy's going to play next year.
I think Sandin's the only one that is going to be on the team.
Maybe Robertson.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Maybe Timothy Liljegren is like an eighth, but like,
people around the team I talked to the last couple of days think Robertson might be another year.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way too. So what do you do? Like, That's why I understand your question with Riley. Like, you don't have, if you're not trading any of those big guys, and really it's just two, because you can't trade Tavares and you're not trading Matthews. Really, it's, are you trading Marner? Are you trading Nylander? And then the question with that is like, are you actually making your team better? Or are you just making change to change?
I love this phrase, so I'll keep using it. Let me galaxy brain this a little bit more. Riley's probably not going to be on your top power play unit next year, right?
No.
So his offensive production is going to change pretty dramatically by not being on the top power play unit. If you look at his even strength point production, which of their defensemen is the best at producing offense at even strength?
Last season?
Last 2 years.
I'm sure it's not Riley because you're hinting at that. Is it Muzzin?
It's Muzzin. And Brody and Hall are not that far behind either.
Yeah, so but it's not just points, man. It's not just points, right?
If you're... Yeah, I agree. But it's not like Dermot and Sandin are... I don't know. Anyway,
no, I don't think you can call Dermot someone who's going to help your offense. I just don't think so. I know he looks like that. I just don't think it's true.
Yeah, he's almost at his best when he's focusing just on playing defensively. Yes. I would like to bring Bogosian back. I get maybe the answer is Dermot is either lost to Seattle or you trade him for something else.
Well, maybe you trade him for like a young forward who can kind of play in your bottom six. Like one of the problems I think they had is they just went too old. Like they were talking about this on Wednesday, just this idea of like trying to get these, like how many guys do you need who've won and how many guys do you need who haven't won? And like, I just felt like they went too far with the leadership and veteran character.
Well, that's not really the direction the NHL's going either, right? Like there's not...
You can have like a couple of those guys and like Spezza's like the home run scenario, but I don't think you can have four.
They probably had even more than that, right? Like, you know, if we include Foligno and Nash and like there was a lot of... The Leafs went from people saying they had no leadership to they had every...
They had like every captain in the league.
Yeah.
Well, and part of it, James, is like they just can't get too, I guess, gung-ho with certain people. Like they signed Wayne Simmonds like right away for $1.5 million, which is probably double what he needed to get. Like you could have signed Corey Perry for half, and like then you're a little bit more. Then you've got a little bit more money to spend.
Perry's
like
had a really good year for Montreal too,
and
right?
He had a really good playoff last year. Like,
yeah. I don't know why they didn't do that. Perry seems like he's just got a lot more in the tank left. And like Simmonds seems like his body is just, he did not like, I watched him this year and it's like, man, this does not look like a guy who's had 30 goals in the NHL. Kind of remind me a bit of Clarkson. I remember I know Clarkson was never as good as Simmonds was at his best, but when we were watching Clarkson, it's like, how did this guy ever produce anything in the NHL?
So let me ask you this. Do you think they should care about this perception that they're just running back the same thing? Or do you think, like, do you respect, like, I kind of in some ways respect that they're just saying, you know what?
Yeah.
We believe in these guys and we're going to stick with it. And like,
Jonas, they shouldn't care about the perception. They should care about if it's the right thing to do or not. Like, we're not talking about this for like optics or like wanting to make it look like we're just like, right. How do you win? How do you win with... Let's say you're locked into those top four. Mm-hmm. How do you win? What do you do? In past years, there was more, you know, last year they were able to move up Kapanen and Johnsson and spend that money and do some things. This year, what they don't, once they sign Zach Hyman, I think that's going to get done. Even if it doesn't, like I said, they're just going to have to go find another forward for $5 million. Let's say Hyman stays. They don't have even like $6 or $7 million to spend to do something interesting with. They have nothing. They have like $3 million. Once you assign your backup goalie and a bunch of stuff like that.
Well, and what they're basically saying, and a big part of this whole project, we think those guys are going to be good enough to justify it. And obviously, the playoffs were not indicative of that. But they're basically saying, we think at some point, having Matthews and Marner and having Nylander and Tavares is going to make all that other stuff moot. And honestly, a shot here, like a Matthews shot in overtime in game six goes differently. And maybe we're like, yeah, you know what? Like, and then they get past Winnipeg or maybe they go seven games or something with Winnipeg. And we're like, yeah, maybe they have something. Like maybe... I don't know. Maybe we're like Kyle Dubas was trying to say, like we're focusing on these three games and saying it can't work when they're like one shot away from it, maybe sort of working. But to your point that you raised a few days ago, is it working to the point that it actually wins you a cup, or is it just working that you make inroads in the playoffs and like you're not good enough to beat Tampa or Colorado?
Yeah,
I don't know. Because I don't think they were good enough to beat those teams.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that their intention is to bring back like 17 of the same players? I don't.
No.
No, something's got to give here, right? So what is that? What does that look like? If it's not Riley, like, give me some other suggestions for what they could change that would allow the team to look a lot different. That's not just like adding like some different fourth line guys.
Well, Anderson's one. I mean, that's okay, something. So like,
so
that's
think, your, you know, I was looking at the available goalies in UFA and you're
it's
right.
Not long.
There's, I mean, Allmark might be the best option. Like, can Halak still play? Like, they're Halak. I mean, he's old, but they probably need someone they can rely on a little bit, right? Like, just like, yeah. You know, I wouldn't want to count on Campbell for more than half the games.
Well, that's why I get why he did it. But like, to suggest that Anderson's going to come back is, I just don't think there's any way you can do that optically. It just would look terrible.
Well, if he falters again.
Maybe they
again,
don't care. Yeah.
If he falters again, then I don't think he's going to come back. I don't think I think they know that it's not a workable situation.
I mean, what you could just not sign Zach Hyman. And I thought Hyman's answers to the questions about his free agency were unexpected. He basically said, like, I haven't spent any time thinking about it, but he wasn't like as definitive, like, I'm coming back, like, I'm going to do it. You know what I mean?
He doesn't know. He doesn't know, you know, yeah. Because that there hasn't been talks about, like, they haven't really kind of. So I think maybe you're reading a little bit too much into that because, you know, I think the Leafs want to bring him back and it just hasn't.
They haven't. Well, but the question for him is going to be if some other team like Edmonton offers him $8 million more. Are you really walking away to play in Toronto? I'm not sure.
So let's like stay with that thread. You lose Zach Hyman.
Okay.
Okay. How do you get better?
Okay. Well, so let's say you've lost Hyman, you've lost Anderson. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you take that money and you get two forwards. I don't know.
Okay. But you got to get another goalie.
Right. But I'm saying maybe you take, well, I guess Hyman was only making 225. So he's not, but say you take the 5 million you would have donated, you would have paid Zach Hyman and you get two and a half players. What do you think about that?
I think you're going to have a hard time replacing Zach Hyman with two and a half million dollar guys.
But that's not what you're doing, right? You're saying Hyman and Simmons, we're going to take, you know what I'm saying? It's two guys.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's still like, you're still not replacing what Zach Hyman gave you.
Also, you're assuming that what he gave you this year is what he's giving you every year moving forward, which is
no. I'm just focused on next. I'm just focused on next year, Jonas. Like,
okay.
Like, let's make the team better next year, and like the years after that, we can focus on after that. How do we make the Leafs next year better?
I can. I'm not sure that if you sign like a $3 million player and a $2 million player. Now, I haven't spent any time looking into like the options, so that this is just theoretical. But I'm not sure you're significantly worse. Maybe you are. Maybe like Hyman just brings too many different elements.
Hyman was playing 20 minutes a game. He scored at over a 60-point pace the last two seasons. He played with your best players. You're not going to be able to get a $2.5 million free agent that can do what Zach Hyman was doing.
Yeah, but I'm saying maybe he can do 60% of what Zach Hyman does and he can be better than Wayne Simmons. The other guy can be better than Wayne Simmons and suddenly your lineup's a little deeper. This is like, James, this is what they're going to have to do. Like, so you're saying, what can they do? These are the kinds of things that they're going to have to look at.
But that's why I'm talking about like Riley and some of these other things, because I don't think that you can bring in two free agents and to replace Hyman and get better. I don't think that. At best, if you make really good signings with that money and you bring in two guys, at best, you can be the same. I don't think you're going to improve that way.
But you're trying to deepen your lineup is what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, I would go about other ways to try and do that. Do you think that, like, could they go really cheap with the backup goalie? Like, is there someone they could get? I mean, it's going to cost at least like $2 million, right?
Well, I mean, I know you've said Seattle might take Driedger, but like, let's say they don't. How much is Driedger really going to cost? Like, he doesn't really have a huge case to make a lot of money.
It's the same as the Scott Darling situation, though, right? Like, it's the case that he has is as much as someone wants to pay him around the league. And, I think someone will take a gamble on him. And other teams aren't as cap stressed as the Leafs. I mean, I think Driedger will get, you know, $2.5-3 million somewhere. short term.
Maybe. Just looking, James, at the forwards, like who are going to be available, there's like a lot of pretty good forwards. Like, for example, how much does Brandon Saad cost?
5 or 6.
24 points in 44 games. He made six last year.
Yeah, I don't think he's taken a huge haircut. I mean, he's going to be at least 5.
There's a fair number of free agent forwards.
Well, I guess they could go pursue someone like Granlund, who they like, who's probably going to be, you know, more in like the 3 million range.
There you go. So let's say you get Granlund, another guy, and like maybe you're just like a little, you haven't replaced Zach Hyman, but your lineup's a little deeper. Like one of the problems that they really had, and you and I have talked about this a lot, is they just didn't have like a lot of flexibility. Like those guys like Simmons and Engvall and Mikheyev and Thornton and like Foligno is a tough example which we can explore, but they just couldn't move those guys very many places. Like when they needed help on their top two lines, when something wasn't going, they just didn't have it. Like think of all the wingers that played with Tavares and Nylander. Like it was like everyone, and none of them could fit because none of them are good enough.
What you're talking about is such like small incremental change that I don't know that.
But if this is what you're doing and you're not trading one of those guys, incremental change is like all you can really do.
Well, no, that's not true though, because like I obviously in the piece I laid out a scenario where they could do something a little bit more dramatic. You just don't like that suggestion.
Yeah, but so you're saying they can trade Riley, and I'm saying but hang on a sec.
That's not incremental change though.
Yeah, but we're basically saying the same thing. I'm saying maybe don't bring Hyman back. You're saying maybe don't bring Riley back. That's one player. Like that's the same thing.
Except I'm changing the composition of the roster. You're taking a forward and turning it into, you know, a weaker first line forward and another forward. And I'm taking
a
defenseman and putting it into the forward group.
I mean, yeah. Wasn't the defense there a strength this year?
So maybe it's a strength that you can afford to, you know, your younger guys are going to be a little bit better. And
I just don't buy that. The other thing like we haven't looked at is like their defense is getting older. Like Jake Muzzin's 32. He's been banged up a bit the last couple of years, obviously twice in the playoffs, different circumstances each time. TJ Brody's 30. I believe he's going to be 31. Justin Hall's 30. Justin Hall had a tough year, tough second half, I should say.
I looked at everything yesterday, Jonas. I was like, well, maybe I guess they could think about, you know, they could trade Muzzin. And it's like, well, like, how are you going to get better doing that?
That's why this is really tough. All right, James, what else really stood out to you about yesterday? Did any of the comments from the players surprise you?
No, probably not. I can't. Was there anything? No. I mean, it was pretty... It was about what I had expected. You know, there was... Marner seems like he needs some time away, I think, to kind of clear his head and whatever. I mean, he seemed, you know... He seemed like a little bit overly frustrated or something.
I don't know about overly. I think fairly frustrated.
You know, calling people in the... who have written things about him liars and whatever. I mean, I don't know, like... Sometimes there's just like stuff going on around Marner that it just feels like doesn't need to have, like it almost feels like they should just, his camp should just simplify his life a little bit. And
well, what do you think this all comes back to? It all comes back to the way that contract situation played out, unfortunately.
Which comes back to stuff that's been around him for a long time. So, you know, it's obviously with the way the playoffs went and everything, you know, I've been talking to people around the team, and I know you and I are probably going to do some sort of a story here in the next couple of weeks about that. But, you know, people like Mitch Marner, you know, the other players like him, the coaches like him, management likes him. Like there's not,
he's a great player, man.
But like as a person, he's not a bad person. He's not a difficult, he's not problematic on this in the organization.
No, but like what, I mean, what we haven't touched on and talking about the core and their decision and like everything like that, this all ties back to how those contracts were handled, and they were not handled as well as they could have been handled. And that burns you when you want to really stick with those guys when you're paying Marner 10.9 instead of whatever 9 or 8 or whatever it is, and you're paying Matthews 11.6 instead of
what I don't know, whatever. We've talked about this so many times. Like, what should Kyle Dubas have done differently?
Acted faster.
Yeah, I mean, those deals.
I asked him before that season, James, like, don't you run the risk of those guys putting up really great stats and their value going higher? And he didn't, I don't remember exactly what he said, but it wasn't a very satisfying answer. Like, that wasn't hard to see that Matthews was going to come in and score a bunch of goals. Marner was going to put up a bunch of points. And like, suddenly those guys were going to say, yeah, I want more money. Like, that, yeah. And that hurts you. Like, that's a player. Like,
well, Nylander, especially, I don't know why they waited so long. Like, I don't know what they were thinking they were going to be able to get. I think all three of those guys would have signed for less if they did it earlier. Maybe not. Yes. Like, maybe not. I mean, this is
no. Maybe this, James, like, maybe Matthews instead of maybe Matthews signs for 11, but it's on a 7-year contract.
I think he would have went 8 years, honestly.
Or even 8, right? So
this is a bit speculative because no one's told me exactly what it would be, but I think Matthews would have signed for 8 years by 11. I think Marner would have signed for 7 or 8 years by like 9. 8.
I think it could have been even 8.
And Nylander would have been like 6 by 6.5 or 7 years by 6.5, like similar. So, and I don't know. It seemed like they were trying to like squeeze those guys or something, and it just completely blew up in their face. So, you know, like all told, how much does that really save them? You know, it saves you 600 on Matthews and 1.8 on Marner and 0.4 on.
That's a whole player. That's a good player.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just thinking this out loud here. I got my notepad and I'm, you know, 1.8 and, you know, Nylander's like 4, you know, it's like 2.8 million. It would make a difference, but, you know, is having an extra 2.7 million, is that going to change? I don't know. Is that going to make you as good as Tampa?
I mean, maybe. Makes you better.
Geez, you really think you're signing a good player for $2.5 million this offseason?
Yeah. I mean, how much did my boy Jesper Foss go for in free agency? I mean, he's not a great player, but he's a pretty good player. I think he got like $2 million.
Did he have a big year? I didn't even notice him this year.
No, but like he's solid. He's better than some of the guys that the Leafs had in their bottom six. So
I'm just trying to, for context, to say like how much did waiting actually cost them? I mean, I think not having them on more term is going to be a really problematic when those.
Yeah, I mean, Matthews and Nylander are up in 3 years.
Yeah.
3 more seasons. Like, and you know what? Like, I think part of this is also the different approach that Kyle Dubas is trying to take as general manager. And I think he's trying to be more of a human and not trying to just like, I mean, there's this thing with every free agent contract where you're trying to like win. And I don't think he feels that that's as productive because, yeah, you win, but maybe you lose something intangible with the player. And what he's done and what he's been pretty consistent about is like, I believe in these guys. I'm staking my career that these guys are going to deliver. And like that was the message ultimately that came out of the season ending availability. And before you speak, let's actually hear from Brendan Shanahan in our quote of the week.
Can I answer my phone? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
As horrible and as devastated as we feel today that we've let people down, we are not going to stop until we accomplish this. We are going to do this here in Toronto with this group. There'll be changes that will be made. There'll be tweaks along the way, of course. The team will evolve, the people will evolve, but we are going to get this done. And we're not going to focus on the reasons why it can happen. We're going to focus on the ways that it can happen.
All right. So that's he's professing belief that they're going to get this done. Continue, James. What was on your mind?
I was just going to say, I mean, they literally are staking all of this on these guys and their abilities. And so, you know, they're literally, you know, it's not hard to think of a world where Kyle Dubas loses his job if this team is bad next year.
Well, if it happened again, I'm not sure what happens.
I feel kind of sure. I think it'll be good for the Leafs that they're in the Atlantic Division again, and they've got Tampa and Boston right there. And, you know, a lot of people discounted what they did and because of the Canadian Division. And obviously, when they didn't come through in the playoffs, that gives a lot of ammunition to the people that discounted what they did during the regular season.
Let me ask you something, James. Like that, while you're talking, that's raised a question in my mind. I think you brought it up to me. What if, I mean, the season just ended. What if ownership says to Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas, uh-uh.
Well, ownership,
we heard what you said, but you're not bringing back the same team. I'm sorry.
I'm sure that's what ownership's going to say. That's what makes me think that maybe if they keep the core four and there's some other movement that makes sense, that maybe that's what they're thinking. Maybe they've thought for a couple of years that they're going to make some sort of, I don't know. But I just, this podcast we keep coming back to over and over again is, how do you make this team different than what it was this past year? And how do you make them different in a way that makes them better?
Well, you know what? Maybe they don't think they need to be that different. Like, maybe they think that this is just like that series went the absolute worst it could go. They're two best players. I mean, they may just think it's as simple as their two best players were having a pretty good series in terms of driving play for four games, didn't get results, lost confidence, and they lost the series. And like, they think their team is still good. And they can.
And
do
also,
it.
Jonas, like their third and fifth best player were hurt. So,
yes. So maybe they just think that as much as this is all traumatic, that if you do that all over again, Matthews scores a couple goals, Marner gets a few more points, and they win the series, and no one's saying anything.
I just think that even if they got past Montreal, that I didn't have a lot of confidence based on how that series went. Like, say they won game 7.
Yeah, but go back to how you were feeling and what you wrote after game 4. Would you have thought the same thing or no?
After game 4, I thought they could get through the Canadian division.
Yep. And they'd be in the conference final. They'd be in the conference final.
And they would be the underdog, but that it wasn't completely out of the question that, you know, maybe they're, you know, that the thinking was they were like the sixth or the seventh best team in the league. They're not in the top tier of the best teams. They're not Colorado, Vegas, like Tampa. They're not Boston, Carolina, but they're in the next group. And sometimes that next grouping of teams, sometimes they find a way. So that was it. But like,
I don't think that's unreasonable either.
No,
honestly.
It's not. But Jonah, like, ideally you can get into that top group, right? Like, ideally you're not like staking your career and the prime years of your core on, hey, we're the seventh best team in the league. Like, ideally you want to try and find a way to get better. And if you look at the cap situation in the roster and you're like, there's no way for us to take another step. To me, that's problematic.
Yeah, it is. Well, and I'm just, James, like, as you're talking, I'm just looking up like Tampa's roster and like the bottom of their lineup. It's just like a lot of really good players not making very much money. Like Blake Coleman, they obviously traded for. He's making 1.8. Barkley Goodrow's making 9.25. You know, Matthew Joseph is a young guy on entry level. You know what I mean? Like, they've just got Anthony Cirelli.
They've drafted really, so well. Really well. They've had a pipeline there for their scouting department. I think it's Al Murray who's there. It's like second to none. I think they've drafted the best of any team the last 8 years.
Well, I mean, what was Braden Point? Like a third round pick, fourth round pick, something like
Kucherov
that?
Kucherov was a second round pick.
Cirelli's like a second round pick, I think.
Vasilevsky was a late first rounder. You know,
Andre Palat is like a seventh round pick. Yanni Gord
was undrafted, wasn't he?
He was undrafted. Yeah.
They've done such a good job, and it's easy to say, well, that should be the model for the Leafs, but right now it's not. Like, they don't have all that coming, you know, and we talked about this on the last podcast, right? That like the drafts of 2015, 2016, 2017, they didn't get enough out of those, and they're paying for it now. And it's hard to see that they're going to get a lot out of the drafts, you know, 2019, 2018, 2020. Maybe they will.
But not anytime soon, like not next season.
Yeah. I know the prospect folks, you know, Scott Wheeler and Bronman and some other people are really high on the group of players that they've got that are coming in the next, but it's, you know, it's 2, 3, 4 years away.
And you don't know, like, you don't know that just because some of these guys do well in wherever they're playing doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be NHLers or good NHLers. And that's, It's tough, man. Like that's 17, unless Timothy Liljegren becomes something, and unless Ian Scott becomes something, they'll get nothing. Anyway, we've talked enough about that. All right, James, step up and take the mic. It's yours.
Jonas, there are an ass ton of questions.
Like 100?
Well, I like put it out when we started recording, and it's over 100 already. I don't know what we're supposed to do.
Need to get a secretary or like an assistant.
Well, yeah, I haven't even looked at these. So it's like we're recording live and it's like, okay, now let's read some of these. William Nylander fan asks, a lot of talk in the last episode about Matthews and Marner looking tired. In my opinion, Montreal destroyed Toronto physically in the series, and that's why they look tired. Do you think the team can win a cup with the same lack of physicality? I don't know that the physical play was why they lost. Honestly, it felt like tactically they were, you know, Ducharme adjusted and the Leafs didn't.
Well, I mean, as I said to you, James, in Game 7, I'm not sure Montreal, and Keith ended up repeating this point, I don't even know that Montreal had a scoring chance. I don't. I mean, there's that one that Anderson is going to the net and the puck jumps over his stick. Like, that's might be the only scoring chance they had all game. They just didn't generate enough at the other end. I do wonder, though, James, like if they're going to have to reevaluate whether it makes sense to play Marner 22 and a half minutes and Matthews 21 and a half minutes.
I mean, in the playoffs, you can play them that much, but if you've half killed them, you know, some of the players said this season was harder because of the condensed schedule and that it took more out of them.
Yeah. And so maybe you go back to playing Marner, I don't know, 20 and a half and Matthews 20. And
you know what I think?
And then in the playoffs, you drive it up.
I think they need to leave enough cap space that they can have an extra player on the roster. Like they're, you know, they weren't able to rest Spezza and Thornton and these guys because they were so close to the cap for long stretches of the season. I think they need to, they got to put themselves at least 750 grand under the cap.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Johnny Utah asks, can you talk about the opportunity cost of keeping Marner, meaning what kind of moves could or would Dubas make if he had $11 million in cap space? I mean, it's so theoretical. It's hard to know what deal they would be able to make. I mean, I think that turning him into two forwards is probably what you would think about doing, right?
Yeah, well, and you're also trading him for something, and what that is, I don't know.
Maybe maybe you trade him for a forward who makes six or seven, and then you spend the difference on another forward, and then...
Yeah, and you're also presumably getting more stuff than the forward. Like, you're getting really good prospects, draft picks. Again, though, like, then you're taking... It goes back to, like, it's a lesser version of the... Or it's a bigger version of the Hyman question. Like, are you actually better with those two players than you would be with Hyman, maybe, or with Marner, maybe.
It's hard to know without knowing who the players are. I mean, I like what Tampa's done, you know, where if they feel like someone's going to be getting a contract that isn't going to give them value, like Drouin, they move him for a younger, cheaper player, and they keep the machine rolling that way. Or when they traded Ben Bishop and they got Chernak in that deal. You know, another guy who's young and able to step in their lineup and not make a lot of money and contribute. But I'm not saying that. I mean, that's not a great parallel because obviously Marner's a lot different player than Drouin. I don't know. Anyway, it's a good question. Marvelous Mark with a Wendell Clark avatar. Do you think that if this is Dubas's last stand, he goes back to his skill and speed mantra and goes down swinging with that approach? I could see that, you know, as opposed to like, you know, the trying to build the Avengers out of all the captains from other teams and all the old guys that they.
Well, he spoke a bit about that. He basically said, you're just trying to find the right balance. And I don't think they found the right balance last year.
And they went too far the other way.
They went too far. But so maybe instead of Wayne Simmonds and Joe Thornton, like you have Jason Spezza, but maybe instead of that, you have two younger guys.
Wouldn't it be fun to see Spezza play on a fourth line that was really had real ability to do some damage?
Yeah, with like two little like water bugs kind of.
Just, I don't know, people that have skill, I guess. It doesn't matter to me how big they are.
That's hard. I mean, that's like, it's like the central question of this whole thing is like, it's really hard to find good players for cheap in free agency. It just is.
Joe Thorne asks, do you think that Dubas will now try to bring in more proven Stanley Cup playoff players?
No.
It's possible.
Oh, man.
It's possible. I think that Kyle Dubas probably doesn't believe in that you have to have won a Stanley Cup to be effective with, you know, like, I don't think he's not looking for the next Dave Boland.
Well, he brought up the Lightning before they won their cup, and I think the only guy who had won a cup before that was Pat Maroon.
Yeah, that's right.
And that his point was like, who knows? Basically, like, you, it maybe it's a factor, maybe it's not. Like, I mean, it goes to the thing that came up a bunch yesterday was like, how do they learn to close out series? And there's something to that. I don't know. Maybe you just, I don't know.
Here's our old friend Sundin's Flo, who has become a regular person who's got their comments onto the show. Do you think in a candid moment you'd get a feeling of remorse from the players for taking so much of the cap space? Like when Roberto Luongo said, my contract sucks?
It's a really good question, actually. I think in the case of Marner, if you could do that over, you do it over. And you get it done in the summer and you take whatever.
Well, he could have got 7x11 in like July or early August. And like, how much different is that than... Then they went to the wall to get 6 by 10.89 or whatever it is.
Yeah. Or even, James, even if you do 10x6 and you get it done right in the summer, there's no dispute, there's no angry words, you know what I mean?
I was told that there was 6x10.5 or 7x11 was on the table. And then what was all the nastiness for? It was for like an extra $400,000.
Yes, and it completely changed his image, like, which I don't think is fair, but it's reality. Like, people just look at those situations differently. They understand that it's a cap world and that every dollar you spend there is a dollar you can't spend elsewhere. And like, I don't think it was worth it. Like, as much as he got a bit more money, it wasn't worth all the reputational damage. And again, I don't think that's fair, but that's...
Well,
life isn't fair.
If it gets done in like August or whatever, you know, the fans, I think, would be upset, but they'd probably be upset at management, not at Marner, because...
Yeah. And then there's none of that where he's not at the start of camp. And like, there's none of the messages that sometimes came out of his camp. Like, there's none of that bitterness that seeps in.
Where I think we're really pissing off the fan base now. We're like really kind of... Putting our fingers in old wounds that, so we are going to.
Why? Well, I mean, this is part of the conversation. Like, this, it is. That's what the question was.
No, I know, but the fans are so frustrated with everything. And then you go back to like one of the most frustrating things that's happened in the last couple of years, the way that process played out. And, all right. Matt Wright, who's a great Canadian comedian who lives out in Newfoundland. He's got a question for us. He actually has been on the podcast in the past when we were in Newfoundland. He says, with hindsight, who would have been better choices for affordable free agent signings last year? I mean, Corey Perry's one that you talked about. Is there anyone else that I think they could have got some guys like, I don't know what kind of a year that Walmart had, but he was someone that could play 13 minutes a game. You know, have a little bit of versatility, play some center, be a kind of a defensive center. I think they needed some guys that could kind of move around the lineup a little bit more. Now it looks like, looks like Walmart was hurt most of the year and had literally no offense at all. So he did not have a very good season. I mean, who were some of the other forwards?
I'm just looking at my list. I had Corey Perry. Yeah, I pulled it up. I had Corey Perry on my list. He was.
Do you have my list there too?
Did you do a list?
I'm pretty sure there were many lists.
I had Pat Maroon on my list, who went back to Tampa.
I feel like he's been on my list of guys the Leafs should get for like 4 years.
I had Thornton. That didn't work out as well.
Yeah, but Thornton, though, like, it, That's one where for $700,000, I mean, you take the chance.
And I had Jesper Fast.
It looks like he had a decent year with Carolina. He had 20 points.
Yeah, and he's a bit more versatile. But anyway, that's their challenge.
We don't have the full list in front of us of all the free agents, but it's not like there was someone on that list that if they would have signed them, it would have been it would have changed their whole world.
No, and again, they played the entire series without their, their fourth or fifth or sixth best player.
Pridham's calculator asks, did the Leafs lose because you grew a premature playoff beard? Well, I think Jonas has had a beard for 10 years.
Since 10th grade.
Have you?
Yeah.
You haven't been clean shaven since high school?
Yeah.
Have you ever just shaved it off but not shown anyone?
About three times.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I've had a beard for a long time. A year, I would say.
And?
I don't know. I'm just saying it has nothing to do with... I don't know why everyone thinks that people are so concerned that what I write or say or look like or whatever has any influence on the Leafs. why would media be superstitious about... anyway, fans are... I love the fan base. It's a lot of fun. But I get a lot of crazy stuff on social media. All right. Here's a good one for us both to answer. Christian Bale. I don't think it's actually him.
That would be something if it was.
I don't think his...
Big Leaf fan.
I don't think his handle is Leaf fan. Anyway, Christian Bale, how much are you willing to pay Spezza, Anderson, Hyman? Spezza, I think, is going to come back on a league minimum deal. League minimum goes up $50,000 from last year, from $700,000 to $750,000. Anderson, I wouldn't bring back, even if he would sign for an extremely low amount. I wouldn't bring him back. And Hyman... I think Hyman, for me, the magic number is really only around 4.5. I don't want to go that much higher than that. And I'm willing to give him some term to get it down to 4.5.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You wouldn't bring Anderson back even if he'd signed for $1 million?
I don't think so. I just think I
can't. Time to move on, right?
At some point, you need to move on. I understand that there might not be great options out there, and maybe the options will, it'll be musical chairs and they'll all go to different places, but it just at some point you have to turn the page, and it's just gone so poorly the last couple of years. Does that mean he's done? As I think he can still be an effective goalie? Yeah. Optically, I just can't get to the place where you're bringing back the whole team.
MJK asks, what do you think of some of your old work? As recently as a few years ago, you seem to have dramatically changed your opinion on bounces, luck, PDO. You used to be arguing in favor of the stats, and now you seem to be on the opposite side of those arguments. I don't know. I don't think that's true. I think the thing with PDO and all that is you can't look at just that. Sometimes there are reasons why a team's shooting percentage is lower. Sometimes there are reasons why teams can't break through and generate offense, in the series against Columbus. There's a subset of the Leafs fan base that thinks that the Columbus series was just bad luck.
I think there's probably a subset of the team that thinks that too. I mean, Sheldon Keefe brought it up after game 5 that they shot, 1.8% 5-on-5?
The question, though, Jonas, isn't is it one or the other? It's to what degree is it? I agree that there was some bad luck at work there in that series. The Korpisalo and played really well. But to what percentage is it that? And it's the same in the Montreal series, too. I mean, if you look at the on-ice shooting percentage for some of the players and, people are saying the Leafs got goalied and it was just Carey Price. I believe that there's some truth to that, but I don't just look up what the save percentage was and then say they got goalied.
Well, I mean, Austin Matthews talked about that in the season-ending availability. He said every team is going to need some luck to go their way in the playoffs, and I don't know that they had a ton of it. I'm looking up the shooting percentages 5-on-5, James. The regular season, the Leafs shot 9.7%. 5-on-5. In the playoffs, that was under 6.
So is that, so here's the thing. So this person.
But so let me just add one more thing before you talk. Sheldon Keefe brought up, maybe they need to figure out a way to generate offense differently so that that doesn't happen, because it's happened now in two consecutive playoffs.
So does that mean that Sheldon Keefe has dramatically changed his opinion on bounces, luck, and PDO? I mean, the thing that I've learned, and I've looked at this PDO and this stuff for like a long time. I've been looking at that since like 2008. I remember showing it to you for the first time in the press box. And, you know, we talked about it a lot 10 years ago. And I've looked at this for a long, long time. I've seen the trends every year. I've made charts about it and everything. And what I've learned is it's really valuable information and it's really interesting. And it definitely can show you trends and it can show you players who are going to regress. It's the most useful for like extreme outliers, when you know. Remember that one season Kadri had in the shortened season and his on-ice shooting percentage was like 16%? That's a situation where you can look at that and be like, that is not going to keep happening. But when you get closer to the norm, you got to be careful not to read too much into some of those numbers. You got to be careful to say, oh, we had a 6% shooting percentage. If we just do the same thing again, we'll have more luck.
Because they weren't generating the same quality of chances. Like, pretty clearly, that was, I mean, there was some unluckiness, but clearly the Matthews line in particular, as that series dragged along, just wasn't getting as many good looks.
They had 1.6 expected goals in game 7. That was the lowest mark for them the entire season. So it's not just bounces and PDO. Anyway, it's interesting, you know, like, not just are there people, the analytics have become very much more mainstream than they were 5 or 10 years ago. And I find that everyone has because hockey's analytics are kind of a little bit more opaque than I think some other stats, some other sports, everyone has a different interpretation. And some of the interpretations are extremely literal and extremely, you know, pedantic. And some people are a little, I think there's a little bit of art and science that goes into some of the numbers with hockey, just because of the way that the data works.
All right, let's take one more question and then it's the end.
I think this is a good question. Derek Franco asks, do you think it's all mental with the players at this point, that when or if they win a round, do you think things will be more comfortable to them after that point?
I do. I buy into the, like, Brendan Shanahan's theory that once you do it once, it just takes over. Like, it just feels like it's become.
Yeah, you like get the yips because you're just like paralyzed by you get into that situation in game 5 or game 6. You're like, oh, it's happening again, kind of thing.
Exactly. And then one time, like, you don't have that happen, you win, and you're like, oh, like in future series, you're not so. You don't have that same feeling coming over you. I mean, we saw it with the Raptors. Now, the Raptors had won rounds, but it felt like every time they got a little bit deeper, and LeBron was a big part of it, they just didn't have enough to kind of close out and push themselves over the top. Some of that's talent, but then they got Kawhi and that shot against Philly and... I mean, they were down. Do you remember, James? They were down 2-0 in the conference finals to Milwaukee, and then won 4 straight.
Yeah. No, I remember. Yeah, I had my mother was visiting from BC, and you know, she had never watched NBA games, and we started watching that series and got really into it because that was such a fun team to watch. That was such a, once they got rolling, it was really, really cool. That run that they went on. Shoot, I was going to say something. Oh, you know what I was going to say? Is people are drawing parallels, Jonas. You know basketball better than I do, so I'm going to run this by you. People are drawing parallels between the DeMar DeRozan trade that Masai Ujiri made.
It's not the same.
They're drawing.
What are they saying? What's the argument?
They're saying that the Raptors traded kind of like a fan favorite, longtime player to change the composition and bring in another star and won. And that the Leafs, the parallel would be trading Morgan Riley is kind of like the DeMar DeRozan of, you know, like a good player, but, you know.
See, you know what's flawed about that is they traded DeMar DeRozan for one of like the 5 to 10 best players in the league. Yep. You're not trading Morgan Riley for one of the 5 to 10 best players in the league. It's just not happening. It's not the same.
They're not getting Jack Eichel for him or something like that.
Right, exactly. That is a perfect comparison because Kawhi Leonard was not happy in San Antonio. Jack Eichel's not happy in Buffalo. the situation is not going to be that Morgan Riley is sent to Buffalo and Jack Eichel becomes a Leaf. It's just not the same. And so like that's the problem with that kind of comparison. It's the problem with like the idea that the Leafs should just do what the Raptors did. That was such a unique set of circumstances that can't be replicated, I don't think, in the NHL.
Well, that's what I was going to say is the other thing is the NBA and the NHL are so different. You know, the NHL, you need depth in a different way than you do in the NBA. Like, if the Leafs would have got more production out of their third and fourth lines, and like that doesn't, you don't, correct me if I'm wrong, you don't usually say in the NBA, if our like seventh best player was better, we would have won the series. Like that's
not. No, it's all about your best players.
Yeah.
And you know, James, like we didn't mention this before when we were talking about Shanahan. One of the points I disagreed with is when he said like their depth was fine. Their depth wasn't fine.
That
like,
was really
that was
weird.
A problem.
That was surprising. I mean, they had so many guys that didn't produce anything. There's one more question. I know you said it was the last question, and I like to just cram other ones in. Mitch Marner, who we often get asking questions. Should they look to upgrade on Morgan Riley by signing Dougie Hamilton long term?
I mean, that's going to cost.
Yeah. What's Dougie Hamilton going to get? Eight?
Eight.
Yeah. So a lot of the, you're eating into your cap space. Then you're spending more on your forwards than.
Then you're even more top heavy than you were before.
Yeah. And you're spending more on your defense instead of less, which is something that I was looking at potentially doing.
All right. Well, James, this has been fun. It's been a crazy year. And obviously, nutty playoff.
I was talking to, I was talking to Chris Johnson about this. It feels like in hockey that we've been working for like 18 months straight because of the way that last year played out, and there was no kind of break, and the playoffs ran into August, and then we were into free agency in the fall, and it feels like the last two seasons have kind of jumbled together. So. Anyway, this is going to be like our first real off season in a while.
It's been a tough time for everyone, obviously. So we hope everyone keeps well. We appreciate you listening, that's for sure. Thank you to the... I was going to say, I'm having a brain fart, James. Thank you to the... What are they called? Why can't I think of the name?
I don't know. I have no idea where you're going.
All the people who work in hospitals and everyone
that's been...
Frontline workers, man. So thank you to all the frontline workers for everything that you've done. And as I mention every week, eat at your local restaurants, support your local businesses. James, I hope you've been hanging in there, and I will talk to you very soon.
Okay, Jonas. Hopefully we can have a beer together at some point here soon as the lockdown restrictions start easing up.
Woo woo, let's do it. Thanks, everyone.